Okay, so your tests are all graded and sitting on my desk in my apartment. So we'll get get those back on Thursday. I think I grade them. It's been about 10 days, so but if I remember correctly, it seemed like it was better scores overall than last time. So hopefully I am remembering correctly. We'll go through those. I think it'll probably serve as a nice little review for what's going to be on the final on Monday when we talk Thursday. So today we're going to talk about one final tool for this control stuff called the Bode diagram. We're going to get there from the frequency response approach. This probably sounds like gibberish right now, but hopefully by the end of today and certainly by Thursday, you'll have an idea of this method. What's particularly useful about this method is it provides another way to essentially experimentally get the transfer function of some system. If you have access to the physical system and some control of it, we can back out what the parameters are and match them up to our kind of first principles model, or even put aside the first principle model right away and work directly from the experimental data to get transfer function information. So let's start by looking at kind of a simple baseline system. I think it will help us reason about what we mean when we talk about frequency response. Okay. So we just have a mass with a spring connected to the ground, and we have some excitation force over here, F. All right. So we can pretty easily write the equation of motion. I think we don't have to go through those steps today. It's a pretty simple model. Of course, we can write it divided by M. Pretty standard for a second-order harmonic system. Okay. What we're going to do when we talk about these frequency responses, what we're really talking about is how the system would respond based on the frequency content of what your forcing function is. So if I'm pushing back and forth really quickly, if my force has kind of, you can think about it, sharp edges, it's going to have a lot of high frequency content. Or is my forcing function really slow and smooth? Right? And the system obviously is going to react to those different type of forces in different ways. Okay? And the frequency content basically is mapping out how does x of t change based on what I'm doing with f in some way, as a function of the frequency content of f. So let's assume, for right now, f is just some simple harmonic function, sine wave in this case. So it has f bar amplitude, so if omega is really low, I'm pushing back and forth kind of slowly. As omega increases, I'm pushing back and forth more quickly. But the overall amplitude is staying the same. Okay. Okay. So I look at this, I can get to actually a good Diffie Q review question for you. How would I solve, if I'm assuming that f has this form, how do I solve this differential equation? Been a while? Since math 350, right? Diffie Q. So if you have a harmonic forcing function, basically you can assume that your response in your differential equation actually has the same form, right? And generally speaking, you would have to, in this case, either use a complex form or write as sines and cosines. We're going to take a shortcut here in that we know that without damping, we stay the same term. So if we have a sine, we know we're going to be cosine. We know we're going to be sine. So basically, you assume a solution. Plug that into your differential equation, and solve for what constants you need to solve for. So we're assuming a solution that matches the form of our forcing function. Then you're going to take this, along with that, plug it back into your differential equation. And in our case, we're going to solve for x bar. So and that's true. So I could take those two terms, plug them in, and I would get so I just took this x double dot term, plugged them in here, took my assumption for x, plugged in there, and then what we said f was going to be plugged in there. Okay. And what we can see is that the sine terms cancel out. All right. And if I write this, if I want to know what f bar is, that look at least look a little bit familiar. Some different, a little bit different terms here or there, but how about if I write it this way? What's that? It's a transfer function. It's a different form in that we're writing in terms of the input frequency rather than some s. Right. But it is the same information. It's a little bit different form. All right. So basically what that's going to tell us and what this kind of term tells us, right, is how the amplitude of x changes based on the frequency of the input. Right, that's the only thing that's varying here. Right, the mass is fixed. It's a property of the system. Omega n is fixed, that's a property of the system. But the magnitude of my response changes based on my input frequency. Right, that making some sense? Let's plot that out and see what it looks like. So I'm actually going to write, well, we'll do it this way. Omega n. And I'm going to write over here the magnitude of that response. Okay, so what happens at really low frequency? My omega for my input, this guy, is really low. So I'm pushing and pulling really back and forth, sine wave really slowly. What's the response look like? What's the magnitude of that response? Okay. Not that high. Small. Yeah, I think these things could be true. Could also not be true, depending on what kind of parameters you have for your system. Well, what's the limit of this guy as omega goes to zero? That's effectively what we're asking here. As that forcing frequency goes lower and lower, that force starts to look more like a constant force. Right, then I'm pushing on the mass. Right? So what would you expect to happen physically? As this force starts pushing back and forth slower and slower, and I'm pushing really slow frequency now. At the limit of omega equals zero, what you have a constant force. So what would the response of the system look like? Linear. What do you mean by linear? Like mathematically linear or a line on a graph? Linear. Which I guess are a little bit.
Because you get close to a constant,
just a constant response. That's it. It's a constant response, actually. Right. So if I have a constant force pushing on this guy or pulling on it and it's constant, at some point I'm going to pull on this far enough where the spring force exactly balances that. Right. So down here at zero frequency, and the limit of zero, I have some non-zero constant displacement. Okay. We actually can write that, if this goes to zero, you have right away what that constant is. Okay, what happens at high frequency? As I start pushing, again, same amplitude back and forth, same amplitude of force, but now I'm pushing really fast. Goes to infinity. It goes to infinity elsewhere on this plot. So I have this mass sitting there, and I start pushing back and forth really, really fast. Yeah, it goes to a constant. Yeah, it goes to the constant that's zero, actually. Right. So as this kind of gets much higher than the dynamics of this system, you're kind of pushing and pulling before the system kind of has time to react. Right. So the system out here, the response goes to zero, actually. So that response out there goes to zero as omega goes to infinity. And you can look here to see that. As this gets much bigger, it's in the denominator, that term gets smaller and smaller and smaller, and approaches zero. Okay. What happens when the forcing function exactly matches the natural frequency of the system? Then it goes to infinity, right? Then you have a zero in your denominator, and the thing blows up. So we can draw this frequency response largely from intuition. Looks something like that. Okay. Okay. There's a page in the notes, we'll skip over it here. But basically you can also normalize by omega n. So that this point where omega equals omega n becomes a 1 on this plot. Right, so omega n kind of gets factored out, and you can look at these frequency responses in a normalized frequency of forcing frequency versus the natural frequency you're looking at, right, which is kind of convenient to do. All right, so that's a pretty simple case. We got there from intuition, more or less. So, exact same system. Oh, got those backwards, didn't I? I can't see. Okay, so I think at this point in the semester we can skip right to that equation. Okay, well this time let's still assume that f of t is a pure sine wave with amplitude f bar. How do we solve this differential equation? Sure, that's pretty close. I think there's some sine term. But in this case, we actually have to include both the sine and cosine. And And actually, we'll explain why that's the case when we get to the plot. Okay. So you can assume that form, and now we have two constants to solve for, A and B. You have to plug those in the equation of motion, and it gets kind of gross, basically. All right, the solution is pretty tedious to solve this out by hand. Okay. You also could write this instead. Let's see whether we do plus or minus. Minus. Assume one of those solutions. They would also work for this. And you do the same thing. You assume that solution, take the derivatives, plug into this guy. They're going to get sine and cosine terms. For that to be equal, both of those have to be equal. And you still get to a kind of ugly solution, which I'll write out for you right now. But there's lots of intermediate algebra and such that I'll spare you. We can write and I get to that form. And this phi is the phase lag of the response, how we've written it. Okay. Any ideas? What does that tell us about the response relative to the input? It's going to change based on how damp it is, for sure. Okay, so if I start pushing on this thing, right? S harmonic, I'm pushing on this thing back and forth, back and forth. Can the mass respond exactly with that force? Exactly in line with the force? No, there's some kind of delay type thing to how that mass responds. Right? This is what that phase captures. Right? In the steady state, this thing I've been pushing back and forth with F forever. And the response, all the transient oscillation has died out. You have damping, so that's nice. Right? I'm going to be pushing with a certain phase back and forth, and the mass will still lag that input. And the phase angle tells us that. Right? It's essentially kind of a normalized way within the cycle of oscillation to tell us how far behind our input we are. That's why it's called a lag. We're lagging the input. Okay. And our magnitude... well, it's just a magnitude. How big are we relative to the input? Yeah, magnitude of the response. Okay. So let's look. We have the magnitude plot already. I'll add the phase plot over here. So this is omega there. Phase, that's degrees. Okay, so let's think about what the phase should be. We kind of have this damp solution, but we still kind of use this and ignore damping. Okay, so if we ignore damping over here, well, it kind of breaks down a little bit. Say damping is really small. What does our phase look like for low frequency? Or what does our phase look like for low frequency for all of these? As omega goes to zero. That goes to zero. So at zero frequency, no matter what damping is, we have zero. What we'll see is that for the undamped case, there's a discontinuity in this response. at the natural frequency. So we go from, this is 0 degrees, to negative 180 degrees. For the undamped case, and this was undamped case, we have a discontinuity there. So for the undamped case, you're either exactly in phase or exactly out of phase. What does that mean for the response relative to how you're pushing on it? To be in, exactly in phase. There is no lag, yes?
Well, it's one of two things. I can't figure out which one it is. It's you're either helping it along or you're like exactly.
Wouldn't that mean that you're unstable?
No. You can still be stable here. So you're on the right track. So the exactly in phase means if I'm pushing, if F is in that direction, X is always moving in that direction. Right? If F is back this way, X is in that direction. So you're pushing back and forth, X is always moving in the same direction. Or X is always moving in the same direction as F. I'm either exactly in phase, once the natural frequency gets greater than the net, once the input frequency gets greater than natural frequency, now I'm exactly out of phase. It means I'm pushing with F that way, with this harmonic force, that part of the sine wave of F, X is actually going the other way. So I can be pushing one way, and the mass is going back the other. Exactly out of phase. So let's do, see some blanks here, let's do a little plot. So if we have, say it's f of t, right? Our input's just some harmonic sine function, right? If I'm exactly in phase, I'm always in the exact, always in the same direction. My response has the same sign as the forcing function. So that red is exactly in phase. Right. The amplitude can be different, but notice it always has the same size. It's always in the same direction as the forcing input. Right. If you're exactly out of phase, it's the other way. So you always have the exact, you always have the opposite sign. Exactly out of phase, you're 180 degrees out of phase. And because we understand physics, we say the mass is actually lagging the force. It takes some time to respond to the force. But mathematically, it could be leading by 180 degrees and still have the same properties. There's the undamped case. We're either exactly in phase, something like the red line there, we're exactly out of phase, something like the green line. We're exactly out of phase whenever the forcing frequency is greater than our natural frequency of the system. Okay, let's come back over to our magnitude now. What happens when we add a little bit of damping? Let's see if I can. We'll go green next. Let's say a little tiny, small amount of damping to this guy. Okay. Well, what happens as the forcing function goes, forcing function frequency goes to zero? Does the same thing, right? So the same reasoning we had for the undamped case works here. Right? We're pushing on this system at in the limit at a constant rate. So we get some kind of constant deflection. Okay? How about at really high frequencies, much greater than the natural frequency? And push again, I'm pushing back and forth really, really quickly now. What's the response look like? Magnitude of the response. Going to zero still. That's right. Okay. How about the natural frequency? Yep, so before we only had this term.
We have some finite
right?
Number.
So without damping, that guy blows the whole thing up. Right? With damping, that guy goes away, but we still have some other term here to help us be non-infinite. So it's still going to be a problem for us, usually, around our natural frequency, but at least we're not blowing off to infinity anymore. Right? So we have some finite peak here. So the thing to remember about, even though this is mathematically finite now, that still could be more vibration, a larger amplitude oscillation than your physical system could handle. So even though this is mathematically finite now, it's still big trouble, usually, if you're there. All right. What do you think about the phase? What happens to the phase of that response now? Depends on the damping, yeah. So we're going to have, let's assume the same amount. Some small amount of damping. This one's a little harder to reason about, I think. Basically, we get a smoother transition. Instead of having that discontinuity, now we have a smooth transition between 0 and 180. So we start out exactly out of phase. We just have that smooth transition around the natural frequency. And we should pass through minus 90 degrees at the natural frequency.
What's that word under
the minus 180 degrees, exactly out of phase. Okay, let's add, look at one more, or maybe two more. Okay. We had some more damping over here. What happens?
Same end conditions, lower finite.
That's right. Same start and end. So same reasoning there. Same reasoning out there. And now I'm going to have a little bit lower peak. All right. It's lower and it actually gets wider. So at low damping, you have really sharp, narrow peaks around your natural frequency. Higher damping, this the peak itself comes down, but then this also gets wider. And the notes, I posted the full set from last week, or I guess Thursday ago. There's kind of a method that talks about how to use that information to pick out system properties as well. So they're in the notes. If you're curious about that, have a look. We talk about this pretty extensively in vibrations, if you're going to take that in the spring. Okay. What happens to the phase?
I don't know. Does that just shift the graph to the left? It's not as much of a slope, right?
Yeah, it just kind of smooths it out further. Yeah, so you're still going to cross here, but now you're... have a smoother transition again. Let's see. Looks like I do red. Maybe one more really quickly. So I bump up damping a little bit more. What about the magnitude plot? Yep, same start and end. Getting closer to flat. What about over here? Just smooth it out even further. Okay. These plots are what's called frequency responses. So this is how your response changes as a function of the input frequency. So if I have a direct force system, a system with a force acting directly on it like this one, and I really care about magnitude of my response, I probably want to be forcing at a much higher frequency than the natural frequency of my system. So I want to have, you know, a really soft foundation to my equipment, maybe. Right, so that I can easily get to a forcing frequency that's way above the natural frequency system. And I have really low vibration now. Phase matters a lot less for vibration isolation, at least. But you want to stay out of this range, basically, is the one of the lessons here. Okay, those are frequency responses. Okay, I think those are necessary to understand. The more control-oriented look at these type system properties. So these Bode plots are the same information we just plotted. And really what we've done and what we will do is just kind of change the scale a little bit. And we'll see that scaling is what's going to allow us to really easily sketch these by hand and really easily pick out parameters from experimental results using a Bode plot. So what we're going to do is the horizontal axis, we're going to plot that on a log scale. Okay. So our frequency axis that's the kind of input frequency. Frequency content of the input is another way to think about it. The input frequency, we're going to plot that on a log scale. Vertical axis, we're actually going to write that in terms of decibels. So if we have x bar is the magnitude that we've been plotting, we plot that instead. Okay. 20 times the 10 base log of the magnitude we have. So let's look at those two plots and how that affects these guys. Let's do that. So we're going to have, so this is, and let's write this around so we're going to say our natural frequency in this case is 1. So we have a log scale there. So each one of our ticks is a power of 10. I'm just taking basically both those two plots we just plotted and kind of putting them on this new set of axes with our new scaling. So, what does this look like? Well, our phase is really Once we have the new horizontal scaling worked out, the actual plot doesn't really change a whole lot. Okay. So we have 0. degrees. We know that all of them have to cross minus 90 at the natural frequency. And let's see about matching colors. Okay, so we can go ahead and plot all of these guys. A little bit smoother. And then red is smoothest. So those all have the same shape, right? We didn't scale the actual values, we just scaled the horizontal axis. I'm going to draw another line here. A little bit lower. So what's also commonly done is that this is kind of normalized based on this value. So you take this for your given system, and this gets normalized where that becomes a 1. Okay. So what does that mean for the 20 times the 10 base log of that? At low frequency. So here, the left side of this plot is still the left side of that plot.
So we still start at 0?
Yeah, so there's a reason I drew the 0. There's a 0. Right? And then what we'll see happens, and we'll kind of reason about why that isn't the case, is that this stays 0 out to the natural frequency. Blows up there, and then let's see, I want to go minus. Does something like that on this Bode plot. Okay. And we'll see how that's useful in just a second. Let's draw the rest of these guys. So if you look, oops, that's the wrong color, huh? That's the blue guy. All right. So we still get it blowing up in the natural frequency. We still get some constant at low frequency. This looks like a lot more low frequency stuff because of the scaling. Remember, each one of these is a decade of difference in frequency. And then we get it going off to 0. So as this goes to 0, this gets more and more negative. All right. We have a little bit of damping. Kind of the same thing happens. We just really are changing the peak is all. It really is changing the key difference in these guys, right? The peak gets shorter and gets fatter, right? And we see the same thing in the Bode plot. So you still get 0 for most of the time, some peak, goes out that way. All right. Increase damping a little bit more, same thing happens. Increase damping a little bit more. Even a smaller little peak. So really just change our scaling. Okay. So we're going to leave that now and see why that's useful. Hopefully. Okay, so let's look at some common transfer function elements. Now what we're going to see, I guess I don't need that one either. What we're going to see is we're going to be able to draw asymptotes on the Bode plot, kind of like a little bit like we did in Oort locus, simply based on the transfer function of the system. Right. So we can pick out components of the transfer function and draw asymptotes for what that Bode plot is going to look like. So let's look at some elements of a Bode plot. Right. So if I have a positive gain on a Bode plot, okay, all it does is basically, you end up with, on your magnitude plot, turn log k for all frequencies. So that's constant. Okay. And then you get no change in phase. Does that make sense physically why you wouldn't get any change in phase from just adding a gain to a system? Constant? Yeah, it's just affecting the magnitude. It doesn't change the phase. So that makes sense. Okay. So that's a gain. That one's really easy. We've got a zero in our transfer function. What we end up with, and let's see how I want to write this. And we're going to write it like that. So we have that kind of form in our numerator. All right. Let's look. Magnitude. Phase. So this vertical line on these plots is where the input frequency matches that omega 1 there. Okay. So for these guys, okay, what we have 10 to the 1 we actually have 0 until that frequency is called the breakaway frequency. And then after that, we go up20 dB per decade, we say. Right. Remember our log scale is over here. Right. So we would increase every decade, we go increase 20 dB. Right. So that's the asymptotes resulting from that zero. Right. So it's has zero magnitude until that breakaway point, and then after that, the slope of the asymptote resulting from that zero is 20 dB per decade. 1. Let's need. Okay. I'm actually going to add face. So I need. In this case, a 0 actually adds phase to the system. Right. So in this case, we have that's 45 and 90, not. And ahead of myself. So between. So we have asymptotes here on the phase that from one decade below this omega 1 point to one decade above, I have a slope that passes through 45 at the natural frequency. I get from 0 to 90 degrees phase added to the system from that 0. Okay, so same two set of axes, basically. What do you think a single pole does? Single real pole. No ideas? All right. So we're 0 out to that breakaway frequency. We have a slope after the breakaway frequency of asymptote minus 20 dB per decade. And the phase goes exactly the opposite as well. All right, so we're adding phase lag if we have a pole. Okay, got room for two more, that's what we need. So if a pole at the origin, what does that mean in the S domain? To have a pole at the origin. Not quite a single pole at the origin. Single pole at the origin. What is that? If I had that times some other stuff. Yeah, it's a pure integrator, we say. Right. And remember that the number of these you have defines what about your system? The system type, which tells you, gives you information about what? Steady state error. There we go. Okay. So if you have a pole at the origin, right, all the stuff basically shifts over to zero frequency. Right. So that's zero. This becomes minus 90. So, Paul's the origin. Basically, what you're saying is this omega 1 is over here at zero frequency. So, you're only in this part of that graph. So, it's kind of a special case of that one. So, it actually always adds minus 90 degrees of phase lag, or 90 degrees of phase lag, and would add minus 20 dB per decibel, 20 dB per decade asymptote on the magnitude plot for you. Okay, last one, and then we'll see how this all fits together. Okay, so now let's say I have some complex poles. Right, so they're oscillatory, right? I have complex poles, means it's oscillatory. Complex conjugate pair. From those two poles, we can get our natural frequency, omega n, right, just from those pole locations. So I have an asymptote at 0 dB out to that natural frequency. Kind of hinted that over here. Okay. Then after that, have a slope of minus 40 dB per decade. And I add a lag of 180 degrees for each pair of complex conjugate poles we have. Okay. So same shape here, but we're going from 0 to minus 180. It's a difference. Okay, so those are all the pieces you need to know. Let's look back at this system. And you're given a transfer function. Where can we plot this? We need some space. I think we can get rid of that. Let's simplify the transfer function just a little bit to make it easier for us to plot. We're going to say, we have that system. And another way of writing that is we just kind of normalize that magnitude of this transfer function. So instead of 1 over m up top, we just have 1. Right. Well, if we wanted to plot the Bode plot of this, right, certainly we could just plug it into the Python or MATLAB, and it's going to spit out a Bode plot for us. And there's code that went up at 3 a.m. or something last night that does that for you. But it can be useful and helpful to draw this guy by hand. Right. So what elements do we have here? of the ones we just sketched out? I have two complex poles. I know their natural frequency is omega n. So I can draw asymptotes right away for that guy, right? So I can draw asymptote there to the natural frequency and then minus 40 dB per decade after that. Right? And you see, in this case, that gets us the Bode plot, essentially. Right? There are ways we'll talk through maybe briefly on Thursday of how to get how far up the peak is based on your damping. But with those asymptotes, I've got it, basically. I know, in this case, my phase asymptotes, that, to there. That's a little high. But I can write those asymptotes, and now I can sketch this Bode plot by hand really easily. Just like we can sketch and get rough root loci really, really easily, we can do the same thing for Bode plot and figure out how does my system respond as the frequency content of my input changes, right? And that turns out to be really useful information, right? So let's look at a little bit more complex one. Maybe I have that. That's my transfer function now. What does that tell you about the system at all, if anything? Hopefully it tells you something. I have complex poles, yes? I have two pairs of complex poles. What does that mean about my response? How many modes do I have? Two modes, right? Because you have one per pair of complex conjugate poles, right? So I kind of indicated that I have omega n for one of my modes, and I have omega n2. Another one. So this is the crane that has that string type vibration, basically. Okay. You can write it roughly like this. Well, all right, well, what does that do for my Bode plot? It's all nice and good for the simple case. What do I do now? Yeah, so what you do is you just simply draw the asymptotes for one, draw the asymptotes for the other, and then just add together. Right? So I can draw these asymptotes at omega 1 and omega 2. So let's maybe do that. So let's call this omega 1. Omega equals omega 2 out there, maybe. Okay, so omega n, omega n2, we called it. Okay. So our omega n asymptotes, right, it goes out to omega n there, and then we're going 40 dB per decade. Let me make that 40 a bit higher. So we have room to draw it. Something like that. Move it off. All right, so there's my first one. And it's getting out into this part of the curve. You can see the erased part. Where the amplitude of that second mode, or the amplitude of that low mode as I get out here, is really, really low. All right, so that's what this is. This linear curve here is just saying that, hey, the contribution from that first low mode of oscillation is getting smaller and smaller. It's barely responding now, the frequency of the input so high. Right, we're out in that zero, go to zero part of the pure frequency response. Okay, and I know I have, in this case, so let's make this 180. Some asymptotes for second one. Okay. Well, I have the same shapes now, but for the second frequency, right? Let's do this in blue. So that guy actually, and now he is 40 dB for decade. Okay. And now this guy has zero out to omega 2, to there. I misspoke a little bit earlier in that we don't strictly add these guys. We actually are multiplying these. So it's what we end up with, in this case, is total Bode plot. Actually, we are adding. Sorry. We go there, and then we hit that breakpoint. So after that breakpoint, we have that. Okay. So there's our total set of asymptotes. In magnitude. So we know that this response will look something like that. What will happen, though, depending on the damping around each one of those modes, you still could have a peak there, and you still could have a peak there, perhaps, depending on the damping ratio of your system. Okay. And these guys down here, use red. Yes, it should cross. Sorry, let's clean that up. Same thing there. Thank you. And then blue one. Something like that. And then we just add those together. It's kind of going to just keep going. We get something like that. So now we have the asymptotes and how it would have some general idea of how the frequency content of my input affects the magnitude of the response and its phase relative to that input. If we added a K out front, what changes about this now? It's all 20 decimals higher. Well, it's 20 log whatever K is. Right. So 20 log K to one of those. You add that everywhere. Okay. No, doesn't change the phase at all. Right. I could add some pure integrator to this. And now I just add those components we have over there and sketch out the combination of those three elements.
Okay. So would that mean for that first slope would now be negative 60 decibels per second?
That's right. So you'd have minus 20 until that frequency and then minus 60. Yep. So this really lets you scope out how does this change, right? At what frequency can I actually get some response? Right. Out here, you're starting to get into that zero range. Right. So I can tell you also, if I want the system to react, if I want to be able to move the thing quickly, I need to have it not be the forcing frequency way higher than the natural frequency of the system. Right. If I want to control the system quickly, have it react really precisely and track high frequency content signals, I can't be down low here. I need the input frequency to be near the natural frequency of the system. So this can tell us that as well. So this ends up being really useful. We also can get information, and we'll definitely spend at least 10 minutes on this on Thursday because it's important to know. You get information of the stability of the system from the Bode plot as well. Looking at how the magnitude changes around the natural frequency, how the phase changes. when that happens.
Okay. Can't you just tell it from the pole zero map?
Yes, you can. This is just another tool in your toolbox to be able to do that. Okay. And what's, to kind of loop it all back around, what's nice is that we can take some experimental response and fit these asymptotes to it. And then from that, essentially back out the pieces of the transfer function. So if I had this response, let's say, let's kind of talk through how we might do that. We can erase our green things for now. And let's look just at the magnitude response. So I have a system sitting here on the desk, and we have it set up where I can control it in some way. Right? And maybe I can issue, we're expecting maybe this. I can issue some kind of harmonic input. Now this system's sitting on my desk, I can push on it at a pretty well-controlled force and a pretty well-controlled frequency. And they're actually, you'll probably see at some point in your career something called a shake table. It's designed exactly to do this. You set a flexible system on top of it, and it can shake it back and forth at a really, really precise known frequency and amplitude. Okay. So by doing that, what I can do is I can excite the system at a certain frequency, and I can measure its response to that, and the amplitude of its response in steady state. Okay. And then I could plot it. Well, I could plot it this way. Actually, the first way you're going to do that is this. So we have input frequency and then amplitude of response. And I might excite it at some frequency, right? And I'll record what that amplitude of the response is. Right. And then I crank the frequency up a little bit, and I excite it at that frequency. And I record what the amplitude of the response is. I crank it up a little bit more, push on it back and forth, wait for it to get steady state, and I record what the amplitude of the response is. I keep doing that and keep doing that. And I could get some data that looks like that pretty easily. Right. So, okay, that's good. What I can do is take and look, and I see, well, hey, that looks like kind of one of those frequency response plots we just saw. Right. Well, if I took that and plotted it on the Bode plot, the same kind of thing happens, right? I get, I might be able to collect data. This is maybe not the same data as over there. Maybe there's not there, but maybe he's up here. And I can get data points all along there. So I'm just shaking the system at a different frequency, pushing on the system at a different input frequency, and getting data at each point. And then what I can do is take a look at that data and say, well, this kind of looks like there's some peak there, so I know that crossing frequency is there. And then all those look like they're going there. Right? I can look for that second peak. Okay, it looks like there's another peak there. And now from that, you have those asymptotes from the experimental data. I know from those asymptotes what the transfer function is. Make a little bit of sense? Yes? Okay. And I could do the same thing with phase, right? I get phase information for each plot too.
So just based on the shape, you can tell like how many zeros or poles or...
Exactly right. Exactly right. Yep. So I can just shake on the system, push on the system at different frequencies, shake it at different frequencies, record its response. I'm going to get some data, and I can fit those asymptotes to that guy and figure out a lot about the system. I can get approximations. And then quite often that won't give you everything you need. Like this, these asymptotes are not going to give you what's the damping ratio, for example. All right, so you have to look at what's the amplitude of that peak and other ways to get damping ratio, some of which we talked about, you know, before a break or whatever. But this is a really nice way to quickly get a lot of information about your system. And these are easy experiments to run on most systems. Okay, questions about that?